You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, November 14th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, calls from Occupy Portland, Occupy Salt Lake, Occupy Denver, Occupy Albany. As we have a weekend of police crackdowns, in some cases violent, in others much more humane. Of course, we're talking about a crackdown on First Amendment rights. We will get into that with each of those representatives, or I should say, not necessarily representatives, but people who are part of the movement in those areas. Also on the program today, just announced breaking, the Supreme Court will hear a challenge to the Affordable Care Act, probably happen oral arguments sometime in the spring, maybe in March. Of the four or five cases they could have taken, it seems they've taken one out of the Atlanta District Court. We'll have more on that as the show continues. Europe continues to be a disaster. And Herman Cain's wife, just the only way the allegations can be true against Herman Cain, as if she hasn't known her husband in 43 years. I don't know what to say. My guess is most women who are married to serial sexual harassers probably don't know it. That and other news as we go on. I want to remind you of a couple of things. One, this is the award-winning Majority Report. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We won the Best News Politics Podcast Award, perfectly timed as we are just about to celebrate our one-year anniversary of the relaunch of this show. And to do so, we will have a 12-hour live show. Let me repeat what I just said. We will have a 12-hour live show that will run from 11:30 a.m. Eastern to 11:30 p.m. Eastern. We will be live. We will take many guests. I will be drinking three of those five-hour energy drinks so that I can wake up in the morning and then I can get here and then I can do the show. We will have guests who are funny and serious and smart. I will talk. We will take lots of phone calls. Some of this will be available as a podcast for free members. Some. All of it will be available for podcast for members.
And if you want to sit there and listen to all 12 hours live, you can do that too.
That's right. Or basically, this gives you an opportunity to, unless you're taking a plane, I guess, to Australia and don't have internet on the plane. This will give just about everyone an opportunity to listen to the show live. If you always wanted to call in, you can do so on this day. And I'll remind my libertarian friends, we will take your calls at any time. The number is 646-257-3920. If you are at an Occupy and you want to call in, give us a report from what you're doing. Call us after 12:15. If you are a libertarian and want to explain to me or argue that you do not live in Never Never Land and that Peter Pan isn't the leader of your libertarian movement, please do. We had a couple libertarian callers on Friday's show. I made it available to everyone. I don't think I even have to mention those callers except for to say, listen to them. Tell me. Tell me if my case was not made in spades without me even having to say anything. It was stunning. I thought one of the calls was a joke call. I'm still not convinced it was real. Now we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Occupier Davis. She's a media committee member and frequent poster at the Twitter feed OccupyPDX. It's from Portland, and there was a lot of violence by the cops in Portland this weekend. You could see video of cops clubbing people. They beat one protester, as far as I know, into critical condition. Try and get an update on that from Occupier Davis in just a moment. We'll be right back.
Should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine and next is black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know. This indecision's bugging me. If you don't want me, set me free. Exactly whom I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow? Should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So you gotta let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow? Should I stay or should I go now?
All right, we are back. Sam Seder on the award-winning Majority Report. We had a little trouble getting in touch with Occupier Davis from Portland, so we'll go right to Occupier Jesse. He is an activist with Occupy Salt Lake City. Jesse, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Sam.
And now, Jesse, just give me a little bit of background, just a little bit about Occupy Salt Lake City. How long have you guys been occupying? Where have you been occupying? Go ahead.
We've been occupying, I believe, for 34 days or 35 days when we were evicted this weekend. We were located in the near west side of downtown Salt Lake City in a park called Pioneer Park, which we thought to be a fitting title and a fitting location. We had the last 10 census that we did, we had about 120 tents. And the way I explained it to people, our population was basically cut in thirds. We had a third of people who are middle class, bourgeois, otherwise have homes and jobs, who were there. Another third of people who were otherwise or previously homeless, who were very much devoted to our movement, were there. And then we had another third of people from our homeless community who were yet to be involved, and at that point were kind of hanging on.
Okay, so let me just get that straight. You had 120 tents as of your last census, a third of whom you'd say were middle class, a third of whom were homeless, and then a third were what you said were not terribly involved in the movement. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there were two, yeah. The homeless population was sort of split in half, and half of them were sort of really core, really devoted, really important members of our movement. And the other half were people who had very severe issues like substance abuse, drug abuse, and gigantic chips on their shoulders from years of disenfranchisement, who are not very much involved. And but
they were down there because essentially the movement was providing social services in the form of food and a place to sleep.
That's correct, and even more especially than that, a lot of human dignity. The biggest complaint that we hear from individuals after the complaint about our homeless shelters is that they are drug infested. But the second complaint is that they leave people with no dignity, and people don't feel respected in those environments.
Okay, and so and how long have you been there?
I've been there. I was out of state for a prearranged trip for the first week, but I've spent several hours every single day of my life since about day seven at the encampment.
Okay, and let me just ask you a little bit about your age, and just tell me a little bit about your background.
Sure, I'm 30 years old. I graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison with degrees in journalism and philosophy. Currently, I own my own business, and I'm a PR consultant.
And have you been been out of work? Have you been what brought you down there?
Well, up to April 2011, I was a full-time professional journalist. I had a lot of success, and I guess I left my career. I was working here at Salt Lake City Weekly, which is our alternative arts weekly newspaper here, and I was suffering from really extreme burnout issues that were leading to mental health issues. It was not healthy for me to pursue the career that I always wanted anymore, and I think a lot of members of the 99% can share in that situation where you know exactly what you want to do, you know what your gifts are, and you know how you can contribute best to society. And yet that industry is completely untenable in terms of how well it's able to compensate its talent.
Right.
And so about April, I left my journalism career. I bought a food cart and became a small business owner, merchant downtown. And I'm still involved in journalism. I'm hosting a radio show here, a community radio station on a volunteer basis. I don't feel that I chose to leave my career. I feel that I had to do so in order to survive. People are working more and more for less and less as the decades pass.
Yes, tell me about it. Now, will you can you just pull back off just your phone just a little bit? It's breaking up a little bit. Okay, so now tell me what happened over the weekend. You got evicted.
We did get evicted. It all started with one of our friends, one of our activists who was otherwise or previously homeless, who died in his tent. The cause of death is yet to be determined, but the police chief took it upon himself within an hour of the discovery of the body to jump to conclusions about what killed this man. And it's really quite strange. Depending on the day, the police chief will emphasize more that there was a needle found in the tent. However, after a lot of searches and asking, we don't know whether either Mike, the man who passed away, or his tent mate were diabetic, whatever. And two, the police chief also will jump to conclusions that a propane heater in the tent must have killed him with carbon monoxide. Meanwhile, his tent mate did not die from carbon monoxide. So I think it's just really important that we wait to find out whether this death was even preventable. We don't even know that yet. Nevertheless, this death was used as a pretext to evict our movement on the grounds of public safety and public health. We were essentially about 11 a.m. on Friday. We were told that we would have to clean out the entire camp by sundown the next day, which was an impossible order for us to comply with. As the statistics, rough statistics that I gave you earlier, a lot of our people had no resources. They had no transportation resources, no storage resources. They didn't break down their tent and threw things out of the park because they had no means of doing so, and nobody would take it, even if they were provided means to take it. So we were mobilizing a lot of those things. I mean, as of Saturday afternoon, we had a phone call appointment with the mayor where we had hope that there may still be sort of a last-minute reprieve. Those communications, that negotiation broke down about 1:30 p.m., and police showed up in a ridiculous show of force. I took a video of all of it. We haven't yet found out what the cost of this was, but we were peaceful campers, and the even the eviction in the face of violence, threats from police, because I believe that threats of violence are violence themselves, and to have an entire city block about 2 deep completely filled with police vehicles, to have the park cordoned off and closed for our supporters who wanted to come and bear witness to our rights to assembly being extinguished, were kept out. And I felt very threatened by the police presence, and I think a lot of other people did as well. And nevertheless, we stuck to our commitment to, in the face of police violence, to respond only with peaceful nonviolence. And so I really was really, really proud of our movement that night as the tragic eviction was taking place.
How many people were arrested, if any?
We had 18 people go to jail. One was cited without jail. I was arrestee number 13.
And so what's next for Occupy Salt Lake? I mean, I assume, what did they do with all the tents? What did they do with all the people's individual property and the property of the movement?
Well, quite ridiculously, Sam, they brought a front loader. It was merely symbolic. There was nothing so large. You know, it would be just as easy for someone, a police officer, whomever, to pick up a tent and throw it in the back of a dump truck. But they would sort of, instead of throwing it in the dump truck, sort of consolidate it in a pile and then sort of ceremoniously take the front loader. You can find this actually at OccupySLC.org. This is the video we have on there right now. This front loader, just, you know, for no reason that makes a lot of sense, picking up these tent materials, pallets, which we were using to get tents up off the ground to stay warm. And we had a lot of people, both middle-class people who are educated, and also homeless people who lost property here because of the unreasonable short time limit. One of our individuals by the name of James, who had quite an elaborate set up, sort of a homemade tent cave that he had in the center of the park, as well as a shrine, lots of money spent on materials, heavy tarping material, etc. He asked the police officers if he would have time to come back by 6 or 7 because he had somewhere to be. And they told him, yes, that would be fine. And he got back just in time to see the front loader rolling through his property and his possessions. And he, like a lot of other people, lost most of what possessions they have for their name today. I went down to our corner of downtown where a number of our homeless shelters are consolidated, trying to help someone find trying to find space in a homeless shelter. And I ran into a woman who was very much involved in Occupy Salt Lake City and who is otherwise homeless, and she was just completely distraught. She said that she was going to be sleeping on the floor of the homeless shelter that night because they were full, which is undignified. There's absolutely no privacy there. She said that, well, you know, of course, things aren't perfect at Occupy Salt Lake City in terms of security. She said she feels more secure in leaving her property behind in her tent than she ever would at the shelter. And worst of all, what she was facing that night is she had a shopping cart of her life's possessions, and she can't bring any of that into the shelter. So she has to choose between holding on to what few material goods she has left in her life and taking a bed, well, not even a bed, but taking a roof where she can sleep on the floor that night. And it was very cold last night, so that was a really tough choice.
Right.
And, it was a terrible situation for her to be in.
Jesse, we just have a minute now. So what's next for Occupy Salt Lake City?
What's next is we're meeting tonight in a regularly scheduled town hall meeting where we get together in work groups. Today at noon, we're responding with art and laughter. We're putting on a street theater action every day this week at noon on Gallivan Avenue and Main Street. And tomorrow at 2 p.m., we will be descending on the Salt Lake City Council to share our critique, our concern with not just the Salt Lake City Police Department's conduct last night, the mayor's decision to engage them that way, but also what we feel is an inadequate amount of social services in our community to our homeless friends. Moving forward in terms of whether we recamp and whatnot, this is an evolving and ongoing conversation.
All right. And so people can follow this at the hashtag OccupySLC. And what is your Twitter handle?
Find me at Fruith, S as in Frank, R-U-H-W-I-R-T-H.
All right, and we'll put that on the blog. Jesse Furwith, thank you so much. Furwith, thank you so much for keeping us updated, and really appreciate the work you guys are doing down there, both from a movement perspective and also, you know, providing some dignity to people that society has completely forgot about. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam. Keep fighting the good fight.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking to Occupier Davis from Occupy Portland. You know, bear with us, folks, on the quality of the phone calls. You know, we're not calling journalists sitting in the Washington Post newsroom. We're calling people who are out on the streets and who are right in the thick of it. So bear with us on that, and we'll be right back with Occupy Portland. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Occupier Davis, we will call her. She's a media committee member and a frequent poster at, Twitterer at OccupyPDX on Twitter. And you can also check out the hashtag OccupyPortland. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right, just give me a little bit of background on how long has Occupy Portland been occupying, where were they occupying, and how long have you been involved with them?
Well, basically, I have, for the most part, been occupying via Twitter because I live outside of town and outside of the reach of public transportation. I'm down there frequently. I'm an unemployed farmer at the moment, or should I say self-employed farmer at the moment. So I've actually donated quite a bit of potatoes and onions and things from the garden. I started the Occupy PDX Twitter account, I think the second day after Occupy Wall Street, because I knew that my city would be involved. The group actually has the passwords and control of the Twitter account should anybody else choose to post, but so far nobody has. I haven't had any complaints. We had been occupying Chapman and Lounsdale squares as well as Terry Shrunk Plaza, of course, until this weekend. We had our eviction notice at midnight on Saturday, and that was a complete success that evening. Sunday morning, they move in, and everything goes a little bit sideways, but still a success because, for the most part, everyone remained nonviolent.
Well, not everyone. The police seem to have been quite violent. Isn't that the case?
This is the case, yes. I've been watching videos all morning of the success on the side of the protesters and then the complete lack of care on the part of several of the officers. One of our members was beaten unconscious. His back was already broken. And from what I'm hearing, he has he's not able to walk. He may not have the use of one of his arms. He's a very loved member of the group and a sign language interpreter. So for him to have lost the use of his arm is incredibly damaging.
And is this Justin James Bridges? Is that who
correct.
It is? Okay, yes. And he was he also part of the media team as well?
I believe so. He was a guitarist and also assisted with the facilitating of the General Assemblies.
And there's video of him. Is there video of him being beaten? I mean, I've seen some secondhand reports. Is there actual video of him being beaten?
There's actual video. We're hoping that more will come in because you could see that people, the occupiers that were around that particular incident had cameras. So we're hoping that that will trickle in. And, of course, we're asking that anybody who has up close and personal video of that submit it. I know that I have occupypdx@gmail.com. Also on the Twitter, there are several different email addresses that have come up to send that footage to. The particularly scary one that I saw was basically a view of a baton being raised and lowered and raised and lowered and raised and lowered as this man is obviously on the ground. And occupiers threw themselves bodily on top of him to protect him and were roughly pulled up and shoved away to get him out of the way, and they kept hitting him.
Jeez.
It breaks my heart.
Are there any other reports of injuries? How many people were arrested in total, as far as you know?
It varies widely. The reports that I'm hearing now are 50. Apparently, there was an entire busload.
And do you have a sense of what is next? I mean, they have completely cleared out the Occupy Portland. Is that right?
Well, they have cleared out the parks, but the occupation still stands, and it will continue to, unless you know. Hopefully, at some point, we will be heard by our government, and the solutions that we're offering will be implemented. Until that point, the occupation will continue.
And do you know,
look for many more opportunities for citizens to get involved, many daily marches, of course, a General Assembly that will likely be held at Pioneer Square at 7 p.m. every day. There appears to also be General Assemblies that are going to be at noon, sort of a rotating location basis. I have to find out where we are every day now as we're sort of a roving group.
And so what is the plan for today? Do you know? Is there what is the plan for today in terms of the General Assembly?
As far as I know, at the moment, we are going to be having a General Assembly at Pioneer Square at 7 p.m.
Okay. And so now,
and there is going to be a march that possibly, I'm not sure if this is the group decision yet, but I believe that there's going to be a march today, and then they're going to march to Legacy Emanuel to have a vigil for our fallen member.
Now, I want to just get back to Saturday night. My understanding is that there was an awareness by the Occupy Portland people that the police were going to come down to try and evict forcibly Saturday night, and that thousands of Portlanders who were not sleeping in the park, were not there regularly, came down to support the occupation. Is that right?
Yes. It was amazing. I was down there right in the thick of it. At one point, I turned around and noticed that the entire Justice Center and jail steps were filled with people. And they were, you know, safely off to the side in case any arrests happened. But the street between the parks and them was filled. It was amazing. There were thousands of people, and only two that I saw were not there to support the movement, and they were holding a sign that said dummies with an arrow. But we occupied their minds. They were there. They took Sharpie to cardboard and stood with us.
Well, there you go. And now, so yeah, tell me a little bit more about this. I mean, how did the word get out? And I've seen one clip of video it was hard for me to contextualize it, but the police were backing up. I mean, you had a phalanx of riot cops actually being backed up by marching occupiers and supporters. I mean, did you see that moment?
I did. Let me back up a little bit to earlier. There was the one gentleman who threw some sort of incendiary device, whether it was a firework or a flare, that injured an officer. What I saw was that the crowd handed that man to the police. We set a precedent at that point. We were not going to let one lone person set off a chain of events that would shame us all. So I saw the protesters point out this man and then hand him forward, and then the police tackled him and took him away. From that point, I think that everybody, you know, the officers standing on the front line, as well as all the occupiers, knew that we were not going to let this become violent. So fast forward, basically we've got Main Street is now occupied, and the officers realized that they couldn't bring the horses in. That's not a good situation for horses. So they backed them out. There was a standoff, and basically everybody realized that that was not going to be the ideal situation. And by the group, the occupiers, there was a line of occupiers that you can't see in all the video that were on the ground crab walking forwards, forwards, forwards. And basically the officers realized the strategic backup was the best bet for everybody. So it was amazing to be there and see this happening.
And then ultimately, so the police then retreated and waited. And what time did they ultimately come in and begin to arrest and in some instances beat and remove the occupation?
I had gone home at that point. I do have children to take care of. But it was early in the morning, and basically it happened as the police and mayor had stated, they were going to move in as soon as the numbers went down. The numbers went down, you know, thousands of people had to go home and have their lives and get some rest. And so the police, who had had a great presence around the park since the eviction notice was given, started moving in. Equipment started coming in. They had a cat, bulldozer type, or
bobcat,
heavy machinery. Bobcat, yeah. They had heavy machinery coming in. All throughout this, the occupiers are smiling and laughing and helping clean up. No one expected all of a sudden violence to occur. There was one particular instance that was sort of over a park bench where the police in their riot gear had the occupiers sort of surrounding a park bench and tripping over it. And when they tripped over it, they shoved them backwards and hit a few of them. I mean, it seems like there's a few bad eggs in every group. And I think that the officers displayed which of them they are.
Well, I really appreciate your calling in, and really appreciate the tremendous restraint that the occupiers of Portland showed. It sounds like, I mean, Occupy Portland is a great model on how to maintain nonviolence in the face of violence, and to police your own in that respect. And it's impressive. And we'll continue to follow on the Occupy Portland hashtag and your Twitter feed at OccupyPDX. Occupier
Davis, thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us. All right, folks, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Jasmine Sailing on the Nonviolence Committee of Occupy Denver. We'll be right back after this.
You have to let that rug out.
All right, on the phone is Jasmine. She is on the Nonviolence Committee of Occupy Denver. Welcome to the program, Jasmine.
Thank you.
Give me an update on what is happening in Denver.
Well, it started with Friday night. Basically in the middle of the night, they delivered the police delivered notice of enforcing the encumbrance of public right-of-way, which means that you can't have belongings or anything basically on the sidewalk, because since people aren't allowed to be in the park after 11 o'clock, everyone's been sleeping out on the sidewalk, and that's where all the tables are and everything.
Okay.
So,
and how many people? So, how many people were there?
When that happened, maybe about 24. There are some complaints about the police being rude and waking them up and throwing flyers in their faces. But when they were spoken with, they said that there would be that if it happened, there would be ample warning. So they weren't taking anything away that night. On Saturday, after the normal Saturday march, at the end of it, we went to the Capitol and we're having a people's mic. And that was when we saw the police begin coming in. And I would expect the excuse beyond the encumbrance of public right-of-way would be that three people put tents up in one little area of the park. And, of course, we all know that tents are the greatest threat to the country right now. So,
well, they have a lot of, you know, sharp edges sometimes, and they can poke people's eyes.
Yeah, so that requires 200 police to come in and put on riot gear. So since they were staging, of course, everyone, you know, a lot of us went over there, and there's a group effort to load as much stuff as possible into people's cars and get it away from there. So that when they did come in, they took away the food as usual and the tents, of course, and everything else that was there. And one of the unfortunate aspects of that is, you know, we have a fair number of homeless people who sleep there, especially women and other people who don't feel safe elsewhere. So they leave their, you know, they often leave their stuff there during the day, and any of them who were gone, you know, not wanting to be in the march, weren't there to take care of their stuff. So, you know, they lost everything.
Right.
So it wasn't just trying to clean up Occupy Denver. It was cleaning up the homeless people who have been there a lot longer than Occupy Denver.
Now, let me ask you this, Jasmine. I have seen photos from the way that the Denver police have approached the occupation in the past, pulling out guns, aiming guns at people.
Yes.
What was their response over the weekend?
Well, we had some confusion. There were people saying there was tear gas, which didn't actually happen. What made people think that was there was the fire in the grill, which firemen had told us before it's perfectly legal to have that fire in the grill as long as we use charcoal and are cooking on it. But I guess the first thing the police did, and I didn't see this because it was behind the line of people, but I saw it on the video afterwards, the police came in first with fire extinguishers and put out the fire on the grill. And between the fire extinguishers and the fire being extinguished, this caused a huge billow of smoke. So we all basically just saw this huge cloud coming at us. And so, you know, my reaction was to think, oh, heck, and or say it and get up and move backwards as quickly as possible. And so a lot of people were spooked by seeing that cloud, and obviously a lot of people thought it was tear gas. I thought I smelled at one point a whiff of pepper spray, but, you know, it's such a small whiff that it wasn't irritating like it is when I'm standing by a big lingering cloud of it, like on October 22nd.
Right.
And
were the police in general nonviolent in the – did they – how many people did they arrest in the eviction? Were they
– They arrested during the course of the night. There are 21 arrests. The medics reported treating a lot of injuries, and they also said they did find casings for pepper balls on the scene. I have one of the most reliable witnesses I know personally saw six of the arrests and saw three people getting fallaciously threatened with arrest. He also said that one of the arrests he saw was brutal, and I know there is a lot of people being treated. So I think 17 of the arrests were there at the park, and after everything got taken away and all the food got thrown away and everything, people basically marched off and went downtown, went to different areas, and there was, I think, four more people who were arrested during that point of the night. And the people who went over to bail them out weren't allowed to bail them out last night. I mean, that night, the excuse was that the computer system that is used for processing background checks was down.
Oh, yes, those computers can be so unreliable.
Yeah. Very conveniently unreliable. And the next morning in the courtroom, for 20 out of 21 of the arrestees, no one was allowed to bring pens in. Even the media couldn't bring pens in, so the team there had to basically split each arrestee.
Wait, they were not allowed to bring pens into the courtroom?
Right, they couldn't, write anything.
Was there
down.
Any reason for that, given for that?
I'm not sure. I don't know if they officially claimed anything, but yeah, they wouldn't let anyone bring anything in, so the people responsible for getting all of the information had to split up and each handle a different group of arrestees so they could memorize the details and take it out of there.
That's insane.
Yeah, and at this point, they're making it... it seems they're making it clear enough that there's a lot of police presence on Sunday, too, and something pretty ridiculous happened. The only thing that was up besides people on the sidewalks at that point was one little tiny table that they put out to put food on, and there was legal advice to also put political literature on the table because, you know, that's freedom of speech. And they were told by the police earlier that having the one food table was okay, but then in the afternoon they suddenly declared that they were going to take down the food table. And so they took down the food table, they took away the food again, they knocked all of the political literature down to the ground and left it there. And once again, everyone, you know, things progressed after that, and once again, everyone had to march out of the park for a while. So now people are working on tactics for what's going to happen if everyone's being chased from park to park or...
All right, well, Jasmine, we've got to jump. I appreciate your updating on this. We're going to talk to a couple more folks from Occupy Denver in just a moment. But I appreciate your filling us in as to what happened over the weekend, and appreciate the work you're doing.
Okay.
Stay strong.
Thanks.
All right. We got to take another quick break, folks. When we come back, we'll be talking to two more occupiers of Denver. And then we will speak to someone from Occupy Albany. An amazing story out of Occupy Albany. Was it Occupy Albany where the... Or no, I'm sorry. Was it... I guess it was in Occupy Oakland where the legal advisor...
That's Oakland, yeah.
All right. Well, we will talk about that later in the show as well. But Occupy Albany also... Fascinating story, a little bit of a riff between the state and the city. But first, let's check in with one more group of Occupy Denverites. We'll be right back after this.
Here that rhymes with anything.
All right, folks, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Byron, he is a member of the media team for Occupy Denver. Welcome to the program, Byron.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, we had a little bit of an update of what went on this weekend. It seems that the cops are continuing to move people out and that there were multiple arrests. What can you tell me about the arrests that took place this weekend? Did you witness any? Were the police, was there any type of violence that you witnessed? What did you see?
Yeah, I didn't see too many of the arrests. I had thought most of them happened over on 14th and Spear later in the day, but apparently they happened earlier. During the march, everything was peaceful, everything was fine, and some tents went up. We had a rally at the Capitol steps, totally peaceful, totally fine, and news comes in that the police are going to make a move. So a little bit of time passes, so the police block 14th Street, then they block Lincoln, then they block Broadway, which ends up leading to our numbers shrinking and their numbers growing to more than we even had. The occupation remained peaceful, although tensions were rising in the anticipation of another round of needless violence. After probably 30 minutes, police started to step toe-to-toe through Veterans Park and basically came into Broadway and formed a line. After standing around for a while, the riot police in green uniforms, I'm not quite sure who they are, came in and sprayed out the grill with fire extinguishers and then sprayed the rest of the cans toward the crowd. I was in the middle of the smoke and did not realize what was going on at the time, figuring it was tear gas, but I could breathe. Later, as the cops started moving forward, there was one specific officer who I knew had caused troubles before, and I've had troubles with him, and he was very, very verbally confrontational. I was talking to him briefly. He said to move back. I said I would. And as I turn around, I am hit in the back by his baton from stepping 5 feet out of the police line to specifically hit me, which happens yet another two times. Shortly later, after this, the police stop moving, and a guy starts filming this officer. That guy who was filming the officer was then attacked by the baton, and after that, I believe, had his teeth threatened to be knocked out, which was beyond me, because how can an officer legally do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, when that officer is verbally engaging with you, tell me what type of things he's saying.
Well, it's basically intimidation, sort of like, you know, I'm going to give you a hard time in jail, or I'm going to remember your face, or, you know, you wait for me, I'll be out there, I've got my eye on you, I remember your face. And, I mean, the knocking out the guy's teeth comment was the last straw for me, because that's going out of the way.
And
the guy was not doing anything.
And so what did you do, I mean, at that point? I mean, what can you do?
I couldn't do anything. No one can protect us from the police.
Now, so all right, so give me a sense. So they've cleared out the parks. People were on the sidewalks. What is the next step for Occupy Denver?
Currently, we are trying to sort that all out, because as the actions you may have heard before, our group was literally stalked around the city. Every park we went to, there were two police vans with 15 riot police on them, and they followed us 5 hours. And I think at that point, it was no longer about health. It was no longer about safety or security or, you know, encumbrances on the sidewalk. It was a personal issue.
So you're saying that as the occupiers roamed the city looking for a park, a place to congregate, the police were essentially shadowing them and showing up with riot gear?
Yes, and at one point where the arrests happened at 14th and Spear, I heard the police had set up in the shadows of the park and had stormed out from them at the people kettling them inside. But I believe most of them escaped without being arrested.
Now, I just want to go back a little bit. Occupy Denver's pretty well known for when the mayor insisted that the occupiers elect a leader so that he could negotiate with them, that leader, or ostensibly so he could negotiate with that leader. You guys responded by electing who or what?
Shelby, dog. I think the proposal was brought up to the GA that Shelby be leader in response to the mayor's requests and others' requests, and that it would send a message of if corporations are people, surely a dog is much more of a person than any corporation could ever be. She bleeds, she breathes, she has a heart, she has emotions, and I guess it was sort of satire, but with a solid point to it.
Yeah, I think it was satire. Now, my understanding is that they were looking to dig up some dirt on Shelby, that Shelby had multiple sex partners, and apparently also...
I can't comment.
I thought that was wonderful. Now, so what is, there's no doubt that Shelby, somebody get to check what email list Shelby's on, because I have no doubt, you know, a member of the Communist Party, but, be that as it may, what is next? I mean, how do you guys now, will you show up at a park today? Will you show up in a designated area? Will you have a general assembly? How are you in contact with each other?
We're mostly in contact by email and by phone in terms of the media crew. And I believe yesterday we had our GAs at Civic Center Park still, but the police were obviously a very present force that day. The future currently looks like we're going to keep trying to hold the GAs there and hammer out the details of what to do and when, how we can possibly, you know, file lawsuits against the officers or file a lawsuit to be able to, you know, have a place to stay. I mean, some place to stay. We can't be forced out into the open spaces at the outskirts of town, because the mayor doesn't want us in the middle of a city exercising our constitutional rights.
Is that what they want to do? They want to send you to a place outside of town?
That's the feeling I'm getting, just based on the fact that, you know, we can't find any solid place to stay, to set up tents, to exercise our right to peacefully assemble at whatever hour we choose and to address our grievances with the government.
Well, Byron, I wish you luck. I appreciate your filling us in on what's happening with Occupy Denver. Where can people continue to get more information? I know people should look to the hashtag Occupy Denver. Is there any other source for information that would be helpful for people?
OccupyDenver.org has most of our information. Right now, some of it needs to be updated, but it's mostly up to date. We've had a lot going on lately, so... I guess I hope everyone can understand.
Yeah.
I also, one more thing if I can mention, I forgot
Please.
To do so. The officer who was giving us trouble and with the threats of knocking people's teeth out and stuff had, after we were all 10 feet away and he made that threat, he turns to the officer behind him with the less lethal gun and tells him, shoot him now, screaming it loudly into his face. At that point, I mean, the guy looked like he turned white and did not know what to do because we were just standing, having done nothing. And gladly, he did not pull the trigger or there would have been more incitement by them.
So wait, so this guy had his gun drawn. Is that a regular,
yeah.
I mean, do they regularly do that? Do they come into this park? No one is armed. Has there been any incidences of any people from Occupy Denver attacking one of these police officers with a weapon in any fashion?
No, I believe there has been shoving, and I think at some point during the first excessive violence 2 weeks ago, people had thrown water bottles, but I did not see any of them hit the officers. Most of them were landing in the front.
So how many of these cops are coming into the park or approaching the protesters with guns drawn?
I'd have to say about 10%.
Wow.
They're less lethal guns. So, I mean, they can kill, but they're not supposed to kill.
Right. I understand. It's just like Scott Olson. Right. Yeah. It's Scott Olson also. Yes. Of course. It's not the guns that kill people. It's people. I guess it's not the gun. I guess it's the police. All right. Well, I don't know. I have to work out that saying. I'm not sure how it goes. Byron, thank you so much for giving us an update. I appreciate your taking the time. And I really can't tell you how much I appreciate what you're doing for all of us. And keep up the good work.
Well, thank you for giving me the time to be able to make my statement. I more than appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Byron. All right. We've got to take a break. When we come back, folks, our final call before we get to the better half of the show, we're going to be talking to Robert of Occupy Albany Legal Working Group. He'll give us, let us know what went down in Albany. Been a very interesting occupation up there. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. Robert McGee of Occupy Albany's Legal Working Group. Welcome to the program, Robert.
Thanks for having me out, Sam.
So, Robert, let me ask you this. Let me start off with this. How long have you been? How long has the occupation been going on in Albany, and how long have you been a part of it?
We were into our third week this past Friday. We had had three general assemblies, and over the course of 3 weeks before that. So it's been going on for about 6 weeks. The physical occupation has been going on for about three.
And how long have you been a part of it?
I've been there since the beginning.
And you're a member of the legal working group. Are you an attorney or?
Yeah, I'm an attorney.
Okay. So, mm-hmm. All right. Albany has been fascinating to follow because the occupation has been taking place on two pieces of land, which are really sort of just oddly, one is city land and one is state land. Just give us the lay of the land, as you will, as it were, and how that has created some interesting dynamics on the ground.
Well, we're occupying what's known as Lafayette/Academy Park, and it's one contiguous single park, but half of it is owned by the state and the other half is owned by the city. When we set out to do the occupation, we were initially going to occupy Lafayette Park. That was sort of the focus. As the occupation, you know, as it came up to it, we got word from the governor that he was going to be the enforcing the curfew. So, you know, we were negotiating that, trying to get that overturned. What ended up happening is we moved into the city side of the park. And when we moved into the city side of the park, Governor Cuomo contacted Mayor Jennings, who's the mayor of Albany, and asked him to enforce the curfew on the city side of the park because he didn't want to have an Occupy movement right next to the state capitol, which is where we're situated. The city officials, both Mayor Jennings, Chief Krokoff, and then Albany County DA, David Soares, and Chief Krokoff is of the Albany City Police Department, they refused to enforce the curfew, and we've been allowed to stay, and things have been, you know, pretty peaceful since.
And in fact, at one point, I mean, there was maybe it was just my interpretation of it, but it seemed like there was orders coming down to remove the occupiers. And the police basically said, we're not going to do that because why would we create a chance for more violence when you have a peaceful protest?
Yeah, precisely. And there was a lot of pressure from the governor's office on the city officials in Albany to move, and they stood firm.
Why do you think the governor is so uptight about this?
Well, I think Governor Cuomo is doing a lot of his policies are, he's renegotiating a lot of union contracts. He's really on the side of Wall Street in a lot of his policies, and I think he's very weak politically. You know, nobody's really talking about it. Everyone in New York sort of has accepted the rule of Governor Cuomo as just a new state of affairs. And we're providing a platform for people to begin actually criticizing Governor Cuomo. And I think that is what he is most nervous about.
Well, you know, it takes a tremendous amount of moral fortitude to not tax millionaires. We know how brave. It's almost like getting rid of the death penalty, the idea of standing up to a little bit more taxation for millionaires. So
yeah.
I hope you guys are being very sympathetic in that accord. All right. Well, so let me ask you this. And so in Albany now, the DA's office has said, and this is David Soares' office, right? He said that they're not going to be prosecuted at all.
Yes.
And so what is the state now of the occupation? People are in Albany, and there were arrests on Saturday and Sunday night. Tell me what led to those arrests and to David Soares' decision not to prosecute.
Well, David Soares, back when we first occupied, he had issued a similar announcement saying that he wasn't going to prosecute anyone who was arrested by being kicked out of the park. What led up to this weekend's events was there's actually one guy, Bradley Russell. He had decided that he was going to make a statement against Governor Cuomo saying that we have a right to exercise the First Amendment in a public park, and he went to do that. So on around 3 o'clock Saturday, he moved into Lafayette Park, and he had signs, and he, you know, asserted his presence there. He was approached by state troopers. After a brief conversation, he was arrested. It's still not clear what he was arrested for. He was charged for a violation, but it's not sure the reason why he was actually kicked out of the park. When that happened, that sort of got people, you know, fired up at the occupation, and we decided that we would all collectively make a statement and violate the curfew at the state park, and again assert our right to, you know, exercise the First Amendment in a public space. And Saturday night we did that. As I think people started gathering at around 9:30. The curfew, as it turns out, is 11 o'clock. The curfew is actually not published anywhere. There's been no public notice of this curfew, and it actually didn't even exist until a few days before the occupation began. So we had the people out there.
And wait a second, who passed the curfew? Did the city council pass the curfew, or was this a state just, how does a curfew on public grounds just all of a sudden exist?
Well, the law in New York says that the commissioner of the Office of General Services, which I guess like it administers state property, that law says that the commissioner of General Services can come up with a curfew. Now, there had never been a curfew leading up to the occupation. And as I said, it's not published anywhere. You can't go on the internet and look it up. What we found out after the fact was, after we announced that we were going to be occupying Lafayette Park, the Office of General Services, through some sort of internal memo, it's still not clear, said that, okay, we're going to have a curfew at 11 o'clock. And that's where that came from.
Huh. Wow. All right. So what's next for Occupy Albany?
Well, we're working on a whole bunch of things. We spent the last 3 weeks establishing the camp itself and organizing ourselves into specific groups. In terms of the next big events, we've just organized something called the Foreclosure Action Committee, and that's going to be a community group that we're going to work with people in the Capital Region, which includes not only Albany, New York, but also Troy, Schenectady, Saratoga, and just all the surrounding suburbs. We're going to work with victims of foreclosure and help them, empower them to publicize their story about foreclosure and hopefully bring media attention to the foreclosure process in this area and hopefully allow people to stay in their homes in that way.
Wow, that's great to see that you guys are doing all that type of of outreach and sort of providing those broader services. Robert, thank you so much for spending some time to talking to us. Please don't hesitate to email us if there's any stories that you have that you want to help get out there. And I wish you good luck.
All right,
I think what you guys are doing is great up there.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. We've got to take a break, folks, and head into the better half of the show. A couple of reminders. One, it is your support that makes the show possible. We cannot do it without members, and we need more members. You can become a member at majority.fm. You would get the rest of this program, but even if you were, even if there was no other material you'd be getting, you'd be responsible for the for supporting and allowing the first half of this program to exist. Another reminder, Thursday, 12-hour live show. Seriously? Yes.
It also coincides with the two-month anniversary of Occupy Wall Street.
It's the two-month anniversary of Occupy Wall Street. There's going to be all sorts of things going on down in New York City. And we will be covering that live. So check us out on Thursday. You can also support this show by buying your Amazon crap through our link and buying the greatest free fair trade coffee, tea, and chocolate from justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get a 10% discount. We will be back in just a moment. We got a lot of calls racked up, hopefully some of them from libertarians, and hopefully some from occupiers, and then hopefully some from you. You can IM us at Majority FM as well. We'll be back in just a moment.